Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad.
VS.
Welcome to Modcast number 78, with me, Rob, R8XFT.
Narad, the Forgiven.
Vice Virtuoso.
Fantastic. Hiya, guys. How are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Doing pretty good. I've finally had some chance to play some more Civ games, so that's always good. I did want to, like, steal the mic for half a second, just so that we could give a shout-out to Dan.
Yeah.
Because by the time the next modcast is out, he will have been married, so best of luck to Dan.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
For those of you who don't know, Dan is the guy that takes out half of what I say in all modcasts so that it doesn't sound like I'm just a jerk. He does all the math editing for modcast, and he also is responsible for Turncast and Polycast as well.
Yes, all the casts he's responsible for. There's Turncast, Polycast, Modcast. I'm pretty sure there's a couple of others that we can't remember just off the top of our heads. All the best to him. Okay, what have you been playing?
Most recently, I've been playing a game with my wife, a hot seat game, where we've loaded up a whole bunch of the more recent city-state pre-city modifying games, as well as an old Real Disasters mod that was built by Infixio.
Okay.
Mostly, I've been sticking to the Crazy Scotmans, I suppose it's sort of Civitas's city-states. So I'm definitely running Civitas's city-states enhanced mod, which adds four new kinds of city-states, as well as allowing city-states to do a number of things that city-states normally can't do, more like a major civ, but without the capabilities of winning the game, I suppose, or the diplomacy elements that you come with. Civs with real leaders, I suppose, is a better term. Then, of course, I'm running a number of Crazy Scotman's localization-based city-state packs, so basically, at this point, I have no idea what any of the city-states do.
Huh.
Since there's a good, like, extra 100 of them.
Yeah, he's done some really good city-states.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see that he's also done the things with the wall. The AI sims seem to be snapping up the city-states pretty quickly and just basically taking them out of the game. They didn't have many city-states at the end of it. And it's nice to see these mods coming in to perhaps give the city-states a bit more longevity in the game itself.
Yeah, on that note, mentioning that we're going to be talking about Tiramisu's mods later on, he actually has a mod that's also intended to reduce that, because I think that you have almost, like, at this point, a coin toss, where it's a 50-50 chance that you get one AI in the game with a vested interest in killing all of the city-states, and then over the course of the game, without you being able to do anything, especially if they're on a, you know, totally different part of the map than you, they're just going to slowly devour all of the city-states, right? If you've got Germany, or if you've got, say, the Aztecs or something. Goodbye.
Yeah.
He has a way of dealing with this that I think is kind of ingenious, although I'm surprised that it works, but that's the thing with mods all the time, right?
Yeah.
Tiramisu has a mod to reduce early hostility against AI, and what it does is it actually spawns a stack of tanks off the map for every city-state.
Right.
So they're in the game, but you can't find them.
Right.
And so what this does is massively elevates the threat level of a city-state. In order to scare off early raiders that are going to just destroy those city-states right away. And that works relatively well unless, of course, you actually get Germany proper, where their agenda is such that they will attempt to conquer city-states even suicidally. But then again, that's the whole point of having agendas and having leaders with different traits, is at least to try to give you this idea of a different gameplay. So, but at that point, it's not going to be, oh, all the aggressive warmonger civilizations have still killed off all of the city-states.
Just Frederick or anyone else who's specifically coded to go after city-states and conquer them.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, that technique is decent in that it just scares people off during the early game. Later on in the game, when you know you can keep an eye on the map, when maybe there's going to be emergencies that you're going to be involved in when somebody takes on city-states, then the AI at that point is going to go, oh, well, like three or four tanks that are hiding in somewhere that we can't find aren't a big deterrent anymore.
Yeah. That's why I like the idea that the Crazy Scotsman had of just giving them walls and giving them certain things that would at least improve the defenses.
Right.
Against those early attacks. Any other things that struck you from the city-states from your run-through?
So I'm actually running about four or five different mods from different authors on the city-states.
Okay.
One of them, as well by Tiramisu, is a mod where free cities have a chance to actually turn into city-states. They can draft their own constitutions, I guess.
Yeah.
And then they become a city-state, which I haven't actually seen happen yet, I have to admit. Like, I have not watched a free city suddenly revolt into a city-state. But one of the things that I did do as well is I'm comboing that up with HandyVax starting free cities.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows you to drop free cities instead of city-states on the map at the beginning of the game, and you have a bunch of revolting cities, I guess. And what the combination of the two, of course, is that you have a chance when you can, like, not start with any city-states, just a whole bunch of rebels, and then as time goes on, those rebel cities will either flip and join a major city, or they're going to turn into their own city-states kind of just randomly throughout time. I didn't do that. That would have been a smarter idea than what I did. I did 50-50, free cities and city-states. And so far, I don't know how many of the free cities have turned into city-states. There's not like a global notification that says such and such has changed. So that's been slightly anticlimactic, but it has been an exciting prospect where I know the constant refrain during Civilization V was somebody build us a rise and fall or a mod in which city-states can turn into major civs, or you can have breakaway states that turn into major civs.
Yeah.
Between mods like the more advanced city-states that are more capable of building districts and capable of building walls and such and defending themselves, I'm running Liuji's mod that allows proper improvements for civilizations. That's his free city flavor mod, designed and implemented by Liuji just to work with the starting free cities. Starting free cities came out, and that was the inspiration for the free city flavor mod, and the two work very nicely together. It allows more city names, but also it allows any civilization that adds a new improvement to build that improvement themselves.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, kind of a big, I think, miss when it comes to the city-state system, where, if they're going to let you build colossal heads, you won't notice that they're the colossal heads building city-state by just looking at the map. When you find them, you don't run into this massive colossal head. You know, I'm running all of those layers. We're getting closer, to this option of a game in which maybe you could start with free cities. Maybe what we need is a mod where if barbarians last too long, they could become free cities.
Yeah.
Maybe a mod in which free cities can join existing city-states. That would be interesting. And then all we need is this mod where a free city can have a great leader appear. You know, maybe a conglomerate city-state could have a great leader appear and take the city-state. So I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
And I'm actually thinking it's becoming more feasible as time goes on.
Yeah.
For somebody to actually build such an idea.
I wish that what would have happened in Civ 6 is that the civs and city-states had been aligned in such a way that each city's capital of the main civs was actually potentially a city-state. So that when the choice was made of who was playing in a particular game, they'd choose, you're playing with half a dozen civs. So those half a dozen civs would be chosen with the leads, etc. And then, let's say there's 9 city-states that go with that. That those city-states would be chosen from the civs that didn't make it into the top 6, but it'd be their capital, with certain effect if they were playing as a city-state. But then, they had the potential to become a full civ if certain parameters allowed, such as, for example, a civ going out of the game.
I think you could maybe work in the Rise and Fall Golden Era concept where maybe, in addition to having the penalty of Dark Ages, you could also have any of these unchosen city-states also generating their own small level of Golden Age points, right? And then if they begin to eclipse an existing civilization, that civilization might fall into become a city-state itself, while this city-state joins the race or whatever.
That was sort of my thought as well, so that those cities that have become full civs, potentially they either never went beyond one city, or they were fought back to just having their capital. Then potentially those could become a city-state, and another civilization that had the potential to become a civilization became a civilization, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, I think it makes sense too. I mean, one of the things that I've also thought would have been nice is if you could actually flag city-states and civilizations as belonging to the same team. let's say we had a British civ like we do, but there was also, say, like a Leeds town. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
If England is in the game, well, you're certainly not going to run across Leeds. But if England is not in the game, well, then now you're going to see Leeds.
I mean, another thing that could potentially happen in all of that is very similar to the same way. I think we're both talking on the same energy here. But if in that example with Leeds, let's say Leeds decided they wanted to cede away from England and became the free state, that could potentially become a city state in its own right if the, you know, that was one of the options rather than having to be either back to England or one of the other surrounding civilizations.
One of the things I like about this model that is slowly evolving between the various different modders is that all of the different pieces are different mods. Now, I wish sort of they were different mods by authors that were working together necessarily so that you could have one homogenous whole where we're running with starting free cities, we have barbarians can become free cities, and we're all the way up to city-states can be aligned with a particular major civilization and either break off from that civilization or become that civilization, right? Where, as you're saying, okay, so Leeds has broken off from England. Leeds could maybe choose an alternative British leader and become an alternative to Britain, assuming that maybe someone was knocked out of the game, so they're no longer generating major civilization points. Or at that point, I think you'd almost propose a great leaders points, and then they can appoint a great leader if they get enough of them, or if enough people aren't getting enough of them because you, well, killed all the Aztecs. Then you could have an alternative British leader like Churchill props himself up suddenly, and now you have two Britons or whatever. And each of those parts, though, are right now separate mods. So if you find it really you don't like barbarians becoming free cities, I think barbarians should stay as hordes, then you can do that, right? The one that's always the tricky one with that is you're always talking about AI, and I always wonder what it would be like if you were playing one of those games and you become threatened to become a city-state. What happens then? I think the clear, obvious answer is you lose the game because you're the great leader, Gandhi.
Yeah.
And my understanding right now, I think, is that it's still impossible to go from barbarian to great leader in the game. I'm kind of hoping that in future, whatever is coming down the Civ 6 tubes in the future, that there's more DLCs or whatever, that they hopefully it unlocks either by chance or maybe by
design.
It unlocks more steps along the way. It's probably relatively trivial right now to put a Barbarians Become Free Cities mod out there. Sorry, by relatively trivial, I mean relatively feasible.
Yes.
You could build one today. It would probably take you a couple months.
Yeah. Within the civilization's XML, there's the civilization level, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And it almost implied that there's going to be more that you could do with it by making that moddable.
Yes, or, I mean, just having a Lua script that sits there and says, okay, this barbarian encampment has been around. We're going to roll a percentage chance, and if we hit whatever it ends up being, out opens the heavens and down drops a free city on top of this barbarian camp, right? The one thing I did learn from my researching from the Starting Free Cities mod, though, is that free cities are actually a single player, and as such, they all share technologies. So you have to be a little bit careful, because if you're just dropping 100 city-states on the ground, they have 100 cities now.
Right.
So they may suddenly find themselves in the space age while you're still trying to figure out writing.
Yeah. That doesn't sound so good. As well as all those city-states, then, there's been quite a few cities that have been created since we were last on. One that I was looking at myself was the Kushan by Foulweather, who's a new modder.
I've looked at it, but I haven't had a chance to play it yet.
I've started playing it. I didn't get very far with it, just purely because of time. But it's a nice mod, quite nicely researched, I think. It's got a lot of, how can I put this, for a first mod, it's fantastic. It's certainly better than the mods that I did when I started doing Civ 6. It's got a little bit of everything. So, for example, the Kanishka's special ability affects holy site buildings, giving them loyalty, and also can be purchased with gold or faith at 50%. The temples trigger a culture bomb. You've got the main Kushan ability, which is Silk Road, which gives gold and culture and science, depending on whether or not the city it's going to has a luxury or a strategic resource. There's the Horse Archer, which, of course, is associated with Kushan. They've got a bazaar which gives them a random inspiration and has a tourism bonus. And they also have a unique stupa, which gives them culture, faith, and gold, and also grants free relic. From that, you can see it's got little bits of everything. It fills all the buckets, almost, apart from the industrial one. And it made me think, I was thinking about that, and I was comparing it to the Swiss mod, for example. And whilst there's nothing wrong with the Kushan mod, it's absolutely fantastic, it works really well. It just goes to show, when you compare it with something like the Swiss one, the Swiss one focuses on one set of things. I think this is what a lot of new modders do, is put just a bit of everything in all the mods, and I did it myself, and then you start finding, hang on a minute, how am I going to make the Nexus different to this one? Because I've made that focused on gold, culture, science, faith, you know, loyalties in there, there's relics. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that looking at it, while I would say it is all over the map, I would disagree that it's everywhere, since it has, like, a low science focus. There's a bit of one. But it is true that it's, like, so it's a more peaceful, trade-oriented civ than a combat-oriented civ, but it pretty much does everything that is not war-oriented.
I'm not trying to be critical there, by the way. I think it is really nice, and I think that it's also got a little bit of everything, which may well appeal to quite a lot of players. It certainly appeals to me. I think that when you compare, I was just making the comparison just from a modding discussion point of view.
Right.
Because you've got these sorts that are created, which work, but you've also then got other civs that are created, such as the Swiss civ, which is focusing on getting the great people working along with the diplomats and everything, you know? So it's a very diplomatic sort of thing, and really kind of focusing on one really key thing with just a slight element of the bits and pieces. And I just wonder whether or not, does that make it more interesting or not? I don't know. Just make it very different.
My own design philosophy from back in my Civ 5 days was largely try to push a player, not railroad them into it or fence them into a playstyle, but just try to give them the feel of, if I was X civilization, what would be different, right? Now, depending, I'm not super familiar with the Kushan, so I don't know if having a kind of a feel, well, I'm in a prosperous empire, but certainly with Switzerland, the idea, very much strong, Civitas is definitely pushing for, I want to feel like I'm a sort of pacifistic, but not necessarily, but I'm a diplomatic empire. I want to push you gently into, if you're gonna play Switzerland, you're gonna play them as a well-governed, highly diplomatic civilization. They're not going to lend yourself to trying some other different direction, right? And Civ 6 has done this in their game, where sometimes I feel like, coming from Firaxis, the design of many of the civilizations is actually much more extreme pushing in a direction than we saw in Civ 5. Especially with Civ 6 having much more of a focus on the map and the location, I guess locationality of things, right? This feeling that says, okay, I'm actually being pushed to, in some ways, emulate the civilization that I'm playing. I think once you've played your 50th game of Civ, that's where modding Civs can kind of stick out. At the same time, though, I don't think that every tiny pie forced you into a direction civilization versus the civilization that's good at getting all victory types. We've definitely heard that coming from Firaxis about many of their civilizations. Oh, this civilization is good at everything.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of underlooked in the modding scene in the past, and I think there is a really good position for that, as long as what they mean by is good at everything is not either the best at everything, or also should be at the bottom of any tier list.
I do know the Kushan, and that is a good way of representing them, with the different things that they had, because they spread religion, they governed the Silk Road, or certain stretch of it, quite expansive at one point. There's something to be said for the way in which that's been done, and probably I'm being over critical of it. And possibly, and I mean this with the greatest of respect, a team like Civitas, who make a lot of civs, will want to make each one look different. Whereas somebody who is maybe creating the first civ and may do another one later down the line, and maybe a third in perhaps 6 months, then probably that doesn't matter too much if there's some similarities.
One of the things I really commend the Kvalwelder for is that this is a first Civ, so some of the abilities seem fairly easy, but there's, in every single thing, there is a spark of, let's go in a completely different direction. It's not just, oh, I made a market that gives me more or tourism. What I really like is the stupa building a free relic on built.
Yeah.
It's just kind of this nice little twist where, okay, do you like relics? I like relics when I play the game, and I never get any of them. That's how it feels, right? So to me, that's a big, oh, cool, I can get relics. You know, I wish they were actually just more interesting components to the base game where they did something more than just sat around and gave you faith in tourism, but so be it. But yes, I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye out for future Foul Leather mods and see how it goes.
I mod very much like Foul Leather, I might add.
Recorded for episode 76 with Rob R8XFT, Nirai, and Lee S.
What the popular mods at the moment?
Right now, the obvious one is Pokiel's unique Satrap District.
Very nice as well, it is.
It's very popular right now. The idea behind the Satrap District is to have a district that's shared by certain civilizations, but not by others, so it's less unique, but still unique. The Persian and Macedonian Satrap Court by Pokiel.
And also now been stolen by the Sassanids.
Right. It makes sense there as well.
Yes, it does, yeah.
In kind of the Persian area. I have talked to him a little bit about this, and his main goal was largely to build a nice-looking district and to show off the district, but also to make it usable. It's become basically wild popular almost overnight.
Yes.
Because of it being a historical thing, but also because I think it hits that niche that we saw in Civ 4 with cultural starting bonuses for certain different groups. There's a Civ 5 JF DLC that adds many of the same concepts of, oh, I'm this culture and I'm starting and that culture gives me something.
Yes.
To say, here's a Near East, a Middle East cultural district. Pokiel has talked about building more of these in the future. My understanding is Pokiel is doing this for his own, I wanted to build districts with fun district models and then find a way of making it so that other people can see and enjoy the artwork.
Yes.
But it does bring out this nice additional element for, oh, you're making a Persian Civ, well, why don't you add the Satrap district in there? Maybe there will be, in the future, there will be ones for, of course, for me, North American civilizations. I'd like to see that happen. Maybe something for Southeast Asia.
I think the world's your oyster, isn't it, really? It's just the imagination of what each one would bring different.
Right. The other thing that I think that is really fun with it, because it's kind of a little bit of like a role-play element.
Yes.
With it, it is trade routes passing through this city, gives you gold. Okay, cool. It gives you housing. But then the thing that happens that I think is great is that it actually increases the gold in your capital, but only if your city is at maximum loyalty. So where this kind of like this role play element is, you have built this satrap. He's kind of a governor in and of himself, and he's funneling you money. But based on the level of loyalty, maybe he's keeping some for himself.
Yes.
And I just love that little element because there's kind of this Arabian Nights feel. Is the satrap really your friend? Is he really loyal to you, or is he going for his own need? Is the robber baron kind of guy, the baron in this city, does he really have your back, or will he support somebody else when the war breaks out or whatever, right? I'm not suggesting that that actually is the mechanic for these. It's kind of this fun little role-play thing that the satrap has, where he is a loyal satrap, makes you rich, but a disloyal one, who knows what's going to happen? It's a great new concept that I'd like to see either Pokiel do more of or other modders do more of, is just this kind of culturally based, historically based district.
Yeah, sounds good.
I'm assuming it's going to find its way into Anno Domini somewhere.
Well, the thing is, I was thinking very much about this because I could make it a mod that works with Anno Domini, that's fine. I would kind of like to be able to ask if I can actually just build them within Anno Domini and then sort of maybe squeeze the effects a little bit. Because I think with these it might be an easier way round of doing it, but obviously we need to give them a chance to be the mods in their own right and be played by people, and maybe at a later stage I can then go and ask him, you know, those mods that you had and people love and everyone's downloaded now and know they're yours, do you mind now if I integrate them into Anno Domini? So I think I'll probably do it that way.
Yeah, sounds good. Tiramisu. He's the guy that built the Free Cities Converting into City-States mod. It seems that he's much more interested in making civilizations or anything like that. He's kind of more into trying to tweak the AI, which is a constant complaint right now. Although I think it has been getting better over the last couple of months. Although by better, I think it means more aggressive. But it's a lot of it is AI tweaks. He has, we alluded to, he has a mod that stacks a bunch of tanks off of the side of the map to scare off civilizations from destroying city-states. He also has a fairly large mod, change mod, where what he does is he doubles the hit points of all armies in the game. So very similar, actually, in some ways to what happened between, I think it was Civilization V Vanilla and Civilization V Gods and Kings, where they gave 100 hit points to everyone instead of 10 hit points on all the armies.
Yeah.
This gives 200 hit points instead of 100 hit points. And then it also doubles the penalty for fighting with weak units. The goal of that mod is not to make AI better. It's actually to two behaviors that AI have. They won't stick their armies in the fight. They tend to do these little hit-and-run things where they half-commit and then they shy away after their units have been terminally damaged, I guess, because they didn't really commit to... Maybe they came at you with three rows of units and then they damage your defenses halfway with the first wave, and then the second wave is going to crush your defenses and the third wave is going to take your city down. But what happens in practice is the AI goes, uh-oh, my front wave is damaged, I'm going to retreat. By doubling the hit points, it makes the AI less likely to do that because they don't see their whole army as being damaged in the same way. But the other side of that is the doubling of the combat penalty is to actually force the damage, like the combat penalty for being damaged, is actually to force players to play like the AI does.
Yeah.
To also do these hit and run, oh, I need to heal up because my units are worthless now kind of thing. I haven't played with it, but it is an interesting idea to say, okay, if we can't fix the way the AI is working, maybe we can force the players into playing like the AI. And then the other one that he's working on, it's still in beta right now, but it does look very interesting, is a mod to slow down the speed of flipping in loyalty, especially so that when you capture cities or you found new cities, they're not going to flip instantly, but also that there's just less flipping between the games. And then it also is a rebalancing of the emergency system. I think the biggest issue that a lot of people have right now is that emergencies are kind of like lotteries, in a real sense, very much reducing the gold amount, as well as removing all the other rewards for winning. It's just, you get some gold, but what you're largely winning is essentially a out-of-your-control casus belli. That's your prize. I get to fight a war, and I get to win the war, and I get away with it, and I weaken my opponent, and I take their cities. That's the goal of the emergency, not all the other things. But also it increases the combat power more. You already get combat power for being in an emergency against civilization or a city. He increases that bonus. And then he also does this thing where he turns the loyalty to full tilt. So you have to capture the city with armed forces. You're not just going to be able to, you know, say, well, in another three turns, it's my city anyway.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that city also doesn't project any, while it's in the emergency, it's kind of embargoed in a loyalty sense. It doesn't project any loyalty, so it goes to full loyalty. It's not going to switch, but it's also not going to affect anyone else's.
The other thing that you mentioned that you've been playing recently was Infixo's Disaster Mod.
This is a fun little story. He has this old disaster mod. It has a very large number of different disasters, which are largely a random tile or set of tiles gets an effect that comes from a sort of a random source. There is a lot of knobs you can turn in this mod, which I really like. So what I do is I actually try to make the disasters kind of as rare as possible, which still makes them relatively frequent, but I also try to make them very strong. Now, this is sort of a bad idea because you could actually lose, like, a whole civilization very early on in the game because they, you know, spawned on the shore, and as they were building their first city, perfect storm-level hurricane comes over, destroys their entire civilization, and they're out of the game. But that didn't happen to me in practice. But very early on in the game, I had problems, as many people do who are as bad at playing Civ as I do, where a very aggressive barbarian set of camps to the south was attacking me. So my entire military ended up having to go south and deal with this problem, which left me exposed to the Aztecs, who really thought this was a great thing. So they came in with their, you know, Jaguar warrior army, because we're still in ancient era or maybe early classical, and I founded a religion, and this is completely unrelated to how the mod works, but I founded a religion at, you know, as soon as it happened. At the very same time, this overwhelming horde of Aztecs were, you know, coming into my territory, destroying the little defenses that I could buy with my, you know, whatever 400 gold that I had amassed so far in the game. Things looked pretty bleak for me. And then a disaster hit just north of my territory. It was an earthquake that wiped out, I think it took out two or three of my farms, but it destroyed the entire Aztec army. The ground just opened up and swallowed them all, and it had this, you know, really cool effect of flames and shaking. And I'm pretty sure we know, but maybe people listening don't know, that there's actually a huge number of cool special effects that were put in Civ 6. I don't know why or where they came from, but some of them lend themselves really well to disasters. What it does mean is that when the disaster mod, when you get hit by a tornado or there's an earthquake, it looks really, really cool. In any case, the direct turn after I'd founded my religion, so I was like, thank you, Lord, as well as none of my cities were actually harmed, but the plane of battle was just destroyed absolutely in a heartbeat.
Imagine if that disaster mod was developed even further. It could be built into religion and people thinking, that must have something to do with religion, and particularly in the earlier days.
Right.
When there is a disaster, people either pray a bit more and therefore there's more faith going around, or suddenly join a religion.
I think a decent one, especially like if it spares you or doesn't spare you, but it doesn't have this huge negative effect on you, but it is scary. Actually, one of the things that Tiramisu's disaster mod does that I think is very interesting as well is there is a counterbalance. It's not just that you have a random chance that my city disappeared in a great earthquake or fire. It actually leaves some benefit. In this case, at the earthquake, the tile that's the epicenter of the earthquake, which I should actually mention, was actually adjacent to my capital, but it seems that the random damage missed my capital, for which I'm very thankful. My capital was actually reduced down to, like, 10% health or something like that, but I didn't lose any population, or the city center was not removed, and none of my districts were harmed. It leaves a resource behind, which was earthquake epicenter, which gives science bonuses, and I think maybe faith bonuses as well. It's two things, I don't quite remember.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of science. It's like six science on a single tile.
Yeah.
Which is maybe overpowered, except that it just potentially blew back a whole era worth of infrastructure, right? In this case, it also saved me from the Aztecs, so it was kind of win-win.
You can kind of see, though, where both science and faith could come in as bonuses with natural disasters, couldn't they?
Right.
Recorded for episode 76 with Rob R8XFT, Nirai, and Lee S.
What's the criteria that you use for Anno Domini inclusion?
To be a civilization in Anno Domini, that civilization has got to have been met by either the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Romans, the ancient Greeks, or the ancient Persians.
Yeah, so ancient / classical Mediterraneanism is the focus.
Yeah, kind of. And you kind of probably stretch it a little bit by saying, well, we know that Alexander the Great had quite a large sort of area, so he will have met people like Horus, maybe that's why we can have Changa, Gupta, and the Moreans in there. And there's talk of at least one of those civilizations coming across the Chinese civilization, so that kind of makes it sort of okay for them to be in. And probably because I think that those two areas, there are people that are really interested in those two lots of ancient civilizations, and they're kind of nearby, and, you know, I've kind of stretched to those a little bit. And anything beyond that, I think, is a no-no.
Right.
The other thing that I'm struggling with as well is, because you've always got to think about the scope of the mod, not only in terms of civilizations, but in terms of when it actually finishes, what sort of time frame it's in. And in Civ 5, I kind of let things go until kind of the high Middle Ages, which allowed a lot of new civs to come in, but then it was just loads of civs, and probably really it lost some of that ancient feel to it. But what's happening with the ancient world is I'm finding it not difficult, but it's stretching out that over a whole game, the actual different texts. So that's why I added an extra era in there somewhere. So I've got like the Anno Incepti, which is the sort of Dawn of Time era. Then there's an era that is the era of the bow. Then an era which is loosely Bronze Age, Iron Age, the classical Roman pre-Christ sort of age, and then the after the Christ sort of down to about 300 or 400. That's kind of where we're at. I might build in a Dark Ages one just to sort of finish it off, but I don't know.
I kind of like the idea of the end game being the Age of Philosophy. Although I know that is actually the era before Christ, right?
Yeah.
Would be when all the philosophers were doing their things. But then you have the final era. I think it's kind of poetic to stop there.
Yeah.
And then we have philosophies. And then we have major religions.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap, right?
Yeah, it's kind of there. I mean, I wanted to include, of course, the civilizations, in particularly in Britain, and a lot going on in the first couple of centuries AD, with some civilizations that are interesting to me, and, you know, including the Gauls and the Germans were coming in then, and just as Rome was declining. So I think it's important to have those civs in as well, but probably not go on too far, because I think if you start going on too far, then you're covering the same geographical area with new civs then. That was kind of the issue.
Right. What we're seeing with Merrick is this tendency to work to put together three or four civilizations all at once.
Yeah, and then flood.
Yeah, and there's going to be a flood of, say, five civilizations in 1 month. I mean, I think this has been a pattern, because we had the Epaminondas, both Sweden leaders, and Finland all seem to come out in this very short period of time.
Yes.
But then we had this Palmyra re-release of Olaf, which was originally JFD mod and then taken over by Merrick, and Sigurd for Norway. So the two Norway leaders, Hungary under Matthias, Kievan Rus and Venice all seem to hit in like a 1 month period, and now there's silence again. So I think we're going to see that happen again as sort of a pattern.
Traditionally, what does happen with modding the civilization iterations is that it does seem to slow down between the expansion packs coming out, which is the stage we're at now, presumably. No, I mean, I presume that Firaxis is doing another expansion pack. So we do at least two. You know, this is probably what we're seeing at the minute. A little bit of a slowdown, but then once we feel that everything's out, then that's when the golden age of modding for a civilization iteration comes. Because people don't know what Firaxis potentially are going to do next.
Right. And I think it's always dangerous to be a modder before the second expansion hits, right?
Yeah.
You should be at least operating with understanding that everything you build is probably going to break. That depends, of course. In Civ 5, you had Gods and Kings came out and broke literally everything.
Yeah.
In the name, of course, making it better, don't get me wrong. And then you had Brave New World came out. There wasn't a lot of old stuff that broke. But if you built, like, say, a culture-focused Civ in Gods and Kings, chances are pretty good that with the, you know, advent of tourism, that first of all, your civilization would be woefully unprepared to survive in the Brave New World, but in terms of design. But it would also probably have broken one or two things along the way. Rise and Fall didn't seem to cause too much disruption, but if something were to come out where they totally rebuilt religion or they totally redid trade or diplomacy, you might find that everyone has to go back to the drawing board and all of these mods that have been so excellent, they're all just going to be broken and now we're going to have to have modders go back and fix all of them.
Yeah.
The danger here, we've talked about many times on modcasts, that Civilization VI's modding community established itself to a massive level in very short period of time. I mean, we're looking at what I would call the current modding level surpassing early Brave New World, maybe mid-Brave New World right now, and we're not even into the second expansion, whatever it may be. That's a thing, but the question is, how many of these mods, you know, would Civitas just decide to pack up and go home if every single one of their mods was broken, especially if it was broken in ways that would be difficult to salvage? So the volatility right now is definitely a factor.
If, like, there's, let's say, there is expansion pack, and then you create a new civilization, people don't ask for a vanilla version, so you're safe. You can build it, say, no, I've built it for the most recent version and that's it. But if you build a version that works well for vanilla or for the rise and fall, then people are going to want it to be created as soon as possible for the next. So you potentially got a whole host of work there.
Right. The thing in Civilization V was the split was pre-Gods and Kings, post-Gods and Kings. There really was no talk of, oh, can you make me a version that doesn't need Brave New World? Because the games were so much different between Gods and Kings and not, at least in the code base, everything was just broken.
Mm.
I don't mean that in a hostile way. I mean that if you took vanilla Anno Domini and you tried to run it in Gods and Kings, no. I remember getting requests, hey, can you make this pre-Gods and Kings? And my answer was always no. I feel like there's I'll call it a sacred trust between modders and game developers in that if they give us better tools in all of the next expansions, which has been consistent with Civilization V and VI so far, where we get to do, the more expansions comes out, the more things we can do, not the opposite, then we plug their latest version, because we want the latest tools, and we also, you know, we're in this kind of funny, weird legal area where somebody could turn around tomorrow and say, yeah, well, cease and desist for all you modders, we're shutting down the Steam Workshop, and it would be entirely in their right to do so, and we would all be very sad and angry. But we exist at the mercy of the publisher, the owner of Firaxis, and they have been good to us. But, you know, in that case, it's a vested interest, I think, for us to say, hey, the best mods are coming out on Brave New World, their best mods are coming out on Rise and Fall. In the future, the best mods will come out on whatever the next expansion is. Get them. Spend your money. I always plug this to my friends. They say, oh, I'm thinking about buying Civ 5 because I saw it was on sale. And I'm like, make sure you get the complete bundle with everything so that you can run all of the mods and so that you have the best version of the game, as well as, because Brave New World is an excellent version of the game, as is Rise and Fall, pushing the Ords compatibility. So as soon as somebody says to me, can you make a version of this that runs vanilla, I say no, partly because I don't want to throw away three-quarters of the tools and then the Beothic become the most generic Civ you've ever seen. They get science bonuses for science.
Yeah.
As opposed to the craziness that we have, right? It's the same thing, you know, if you had to strip out all of the loyalty mechanics and all of the new under-the-hood techniques that you can use from a Merrick mod or a Civitas mod or a JFD mod, nobody really wants that.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
A thank you to lead patron Candace Albinus and all other supporters of the show through this measure. For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
The thing that fascinates me with a lot of mods is when we're trying to recreate a cultural feel so that you feel like you're Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon or Solomon of Israel or Sitting Bull on the Great Plains. The goal for a fictionally based mod may actually be very different. Maybe they do want you to feel like you're a Final Fantasy character, but maybe the whole point of the game is to put chocobos in the game. That's the whole point of the mod, is I've got a chocobo model and I want it in the game. I was actually part of building World of Warcraft mods for Civ 5, and what I still love about those mods was that they're is very little restraint on the idea of, oh, I have this really cool idea, but no one in history ever really did it. Or I have to find somebody in history who did that really cool idea. And then all the other ideas that I had to go with that cool idea, I have to throw those out because they're not historically accurate at all, right? Whereas if you're working on a fictional Civ, well, have at her.
Well, it's generally never about their flavor portrayal as much as it is their balance. I try to keep balance in mind, but I admit that I'm more worried about creating a unique experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's okay, though, for a modder to put out a placard and say, I make creatively weird experiences, rather than saying, I make crazy balanced experiences. Let the person who downloads decide.
Yeah. Yeah. That has been Modcast 78. Thanks for coming. I'm Rob, R8XFT. With me today were...
You're either forgiven.
That's for sure, sir.
Cheers, guys.
Take care.
See you all later.
I mean, I'm sure it can be done with enough time. Come back to me in about 10 years.
Hello. Oh, yeah, I'm just recording Modcast, Dad. Yeah, okay, speak to you later. Cheers, bye.
Sorry about that.
He kind of has a UI mod. He has a, I'm just trying to pull it up right now, and I am failing. I'm actually, ignore everything I just said there, Dan. Here we go. I'm confusing him with another modder at the same time.
If we introduce ourselves, then we can start talking.
Record date,
7th of July, 2018.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.